It's back to the classrooms in Miami-Dade and Broward counties this week, how Palm Beach County public schools are faring several weeks after reopening, and the debate, or no presidential debate, in Miami. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Tens of thousands of students and teachers are back in their classrooms this week in the two largest school districts in Florida. And the safety measures are being put to early tests with a handful of COVID-19 cases in Miami-Dade public schools within days of reopening. Meantime, schools in richer areas of Palm Beach County are seeing more students return to the classrooms than schools in poorer areas. And the debate over a Miami presidential debate. It's all coming up on the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. It's made possible by Willie the Bee Man, bee removal specialist.
I am Evangelina Altamirano in Miami Springs, and you're listening to the South Florida Roundup with Tom Hudson.
Evangelina, thank you so much for helping us during our special pledge edition here of the South Florida Roundup. The pledge lines are open for your financial contribution, and of course, you can also contribute through the WLRN website. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting public radio. The Miami-Dade County School District is dealing with, at least now according to its dashboard, four confirmed cases of COVID-19 in the first week of reopening. The district's dashboard shows that one employee, three students, have tested positive for the coronavirus as we're live here on this Friday afternoon on the South Florida Roundup. Miami-Dade County Public Schools Superintendent Alberto Carvalho addressed the district's response on Thursday.
We are collaborating with the Department of Health to identify the circumstances and the possible confirmation of one or more cases at these schools. And based on contact tracing investigation, we will provide information.
Meantime, Broward County public school teachers and some students return to the classrooms on a staggered schedule beginning on this Friday. Parents, teachers, students, what has this experience back to school? What has it been like for you this week in Miami-Dade County, beginning today in Broward County, and over the past several weeks in Palm Beach and Monroe counties? What's it like to return to school in person for the first time since March? You can share your thoughts with us on Twitter at WLRN is our handle. WLRN's education reporter Jessica Bakeman joins us now. Jess, let's start with these what we know about these positive cases on this Friday in Miami-Dade County. Three students, one employee. Do we know anything more about the employee, if it's a teacher or a staff member?
I do not know. I do know that the employee is at Poinciana Park Elementary School, which is in Liberty City. And as for the student cases, it's, you know, here and there around the county, a couple in the Kendall area, one in Miami Gardens. In addition to the cases that have been reported by the school district, there's also another case that's been reported at a charter school in Doral. And the school district, talked about the sanitation procedures that they put into place, at least in William Lehman Elementary in the Kendall area, which was the first case that the school district reported. And basically they said they had eight master custodians with electrostatic sprayers that came in really early in the morning and sprayed down the school, any of the high touch areas. The way they put it was anywhere someone would sit, lean, or touch.
In terms of the number of cases, you mentioned the official number reported by the school district and the additional reports of an infection at a public charter school. That public charter school case is not reflected on the school district's dashboard. Why not?
Right. So the dashboard is not including charter schools. Charter schools are technically public schools. They are publicly funded. Typically, they're operated by private organizations. This particular charter school, which is downtown Doral Charter Elementary School, is what's called a district-managed charter school. So it's kind of in a little bit of a gray area. It's operated by a private board, but it receives educational services from the school district. I don't know really where the argument is there to not include that in the dashboard, but the school district is saying a charter school needs to basically report its own cases.
Do we know anything about the circumstances of the three students that are officially appearing on the school district's dashboard as testing positive for COVID? In other words, their conditions, ages, how long perhaps they'd been ill?
Well, the fact that they are at elementary schools would tell you that they're younger. The most information I have is about the case at William Lehman Elementary. The school district specifically said that the student did not contract the virus at school. And given the fact that schools only opened on Monday, and we know that it can take, you know, 3-5 days or longer from when someone is exposed to when they start showing symptoms, I think it is fair to say that, you know, these cases in particular probably were not contracted at school, but the school district is working with the Department of Health to perform contact tracing. They're not releasing a whole lot of information because some of those details are private to the individual student and employee. But from what the school district says, anybody who has been in close contact with anyone who has tested positive is being told, is being notified and also being told to stay at home until the local health department clears that they're safe to return to school.
You can share some of your experiences, questions, comments on Twitter. We're at WLRN. Jessica Bakeman covering education for us here at WLRN. Let me bring in Andrew Mara, who is the education reporter at the Palm Beach Post with us from Palm Beach County. Andrew, welcome back to the South Florida Roundup. Schools in Palm Beach County have had a couple of weeks under their belt now. And according to the district's own COVID dashboard, more than 24 students and employees have tested positive for the COVID-19 virus. Tell us about the response that that you've seen and that students, teachers, and families have seen in Palm Beach County.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, that's right. So far, it looks like there are 58 confirmed cases that the school district has reported, 30 of them being employees, another 28 being students. And it's been pretty low-key so far. Of course, most of the schools, as you know, are mostly empty. So there's a lot of space between the students in the schools. They are doing the contact tracing, but they seem to think that for the most part, because students are seated far enough apart, there hasn't been a whole lot of need for quarantine so far. If a kid is confirmed to have a positive case, most likely he was not in close contact with another student for a prolonged period of time at school. So far, there's only been a handful of cases at each school. I don't think any school, district school, has more than 2 cases that I'm aware of. And this is, of course, to be expected. So far, we're seeing some steady growth in the number of cases, but nothing really out of the ordinary so far, fortunately.
You've looked at enrollment, and Jess, I'm going to ask you enrollment as well, because it's a big question. It was a big question in advance of bringing students and teachers back to campus. Andrew, in Palm Beach County, now that there's a few weeks of enrollment data in terms of where students are showing back up, in what types of neighborhoods, what have you found?
So overall, in the county's public schools, a little more than a third of the students have returned, or at least had returned as of the last time data was reported a week ago. But there's huge discrepancies in how that's playing out around the county. And it tends to be that in the more wealthy, predominantly white neighborhoods, more kids are going back to school. In the more lower economic neighborhoods with higher numbers of Hispanic and Black students, much fewer students are returning. So we're seeing some really stark disparities in terms of the number of kids who are coming back into the classroom on campus.
Andrew, stick with us. We're going to talk more about enrollment. Jess, you too. Jessica Bakeman, education reporter at WLRN. Andrew Mara, covering education for the Palm Beach Post. Your thoughts, your comments on Twitter at WLRN. Returning to school. We'll talk more about schools reopening in South Florida. You are listening to a special pledge edition of the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN.
Hi, I'm Jenna from Coconut Grove, and you're listening to the South Florida Roundup. Now, here's Tom Hudson.
Thanks, Jenna. Great to have your help here in this special pledge edition of the South Florida Roundup. The pledge phone number and the pledge button on the website remain active during our program. Thanks again for supporting WLRN. We're talking about public schools reopening this week in Broward and Miami-Dade counties. Been open a couple of weeks now in Palm Beach County. Some students and teachers returned to the classrooms on this Friday in Broward County. Miami-Dade continuing to reopen in phases. Today, all those students who elected to be back in the schoolhouse were back on campus with the first period bell ringing. The district is dealing in Miami-Dade with at least four confirmed cases of COVID-19 here on this Friday afternoon. WLRN's education reporter Jessica Bakeman continues with us. Andrew Mara is the education reporter at the Palm Beach Post. Jessica, what do we know 1 week into the return to the schoolhouse about enrollment in Miami-Dade County Public Schools? Jessica, are you still with us?
Do you not hear me?
I'm there. Here. We go. Now I can. Yes, sir. Yes, okay. Ma'am. Go ahead.
I was saying that throughout the country and throughout the state of Florida, there have been huge drops in enrollment at public school districts, and that has definitely been reflected in South Florida. I got some hard numbers this week from Broward and Miami-Dade and compared those back to the official enrollment numbers for last school year with the state. And the traditional public schools in Miami-Dade County have lost 16,000 students. The district as a whole, 13,000, but some of those students shifted from traditional public schools to privately run charter schools. And Broward County's traditional public schools have lost more than 9,000 students. And as we know, that, you know, was part of the calculation in terms of the school districts deciding to reopen, because they were looking at losing a whole lot of money for those students who had left if they didn't agree to reopen per a deal with the State Department of Education. And as far as students returning to the classroom in Miami-Dade, it's about half of the students that are enrolled decided to return to the classroom, while half are continuing to learn remotely. And today is the first day in Broward, so it's not totally clear yet where we're at. The Sun Sentinel is reporting that only 20% of students throughout the district are expected to return to classrooms. However, only about half of the parents responded to that survey, and the parents who didn't respond were counted as not returning. So we'll see if that actually holds fast.
The drop in enrollment that you told us there, that's like 4 or 5%.
It's 6% in Miami and 4% in Broward. It's pretty staggering.
Where do these students go?
Well, interestingly, I assumed private schools, and I tried to check around and find out about that. I talked to the Diocese of Miami, and they've actually seen a pretty steep drop of enrollment in Catholic schools as well. Last year, they had 33,000, and now they have 29,000, which is a 12% drop. However, Florida Virtual School has seen a huge increase in enrollment in its individual courses as well as its full-time students. And I'm still trying to get homeschooling numbers, but anecdotally, it seems like a lot of families are choosing homeschooling as well.
Andrew Mara with the Palm Beach Post. What about the situation in Palm Beach County? Missing students, where are they showing up for education, for school? Do you know?
It's a similar story here to a large extent. The official numbers aren't in yet, but it looks like about 7,000 of the roughly 190,000 students in Palm Beach County's public schools are no longer enrolled. So some of them presumably went to private schools. Some, I think, are homeschooling, like Jessica mentioned, in Miami. And then some have probably enrolled in the Florida Virtual School, the statewide virtual school, which specializes in doing online classes. We don't have the numbers on those yet, although we've been asking, and we're hoping to tease that out a little bit more. But it seems like a lot of students have opted to move into some of these other alternatives.
Andrew, take us inside the classrooms, inside the hallways as best you can, or on campus at least, and what the last few weeks have been like. There was obviously a lot of friction between the school district and the teachers union in Palm Beach County leading up to reopening campuses. The relationship remains contentious still. What are classrooms like with the plexiglass barriers and face shields and face masks? I mean, you know, a few weeks into this, give us a sense of what that environment's like now.
Sure thing. So most students, of course, still are learning online. So for most students, the experience is an online experience. But if you did go into the classroom, again, it depends on where you go to school. Some schools look somewhat similar to how they did a year ago, because there are some schools where more than two-thirds, almost three-quarters of students are back. So in terms of the numbers of people in the rooms, it's not that different. But, of course, other schools have maybe a quarter of the students back. So some schools are really eerily silent on campus with only a handful of students in the classroom. I've heard some reports of classrooms where there's just one or two students in the whole class. The rest are watching, you know, online. And when you're in the class, you wear a mask all day long, except when you're at lunch in the cafeteria. When you sit at the cafeteria, you can't sit, you know, across from your buddy or your friend. You have to sit staggered, and if you can't really face each other directly. So it's a weird experience there for the kids. Teachers have these plastic shields for their desks, which they use. Some say it's useful, some say it's not, because depending on what class you teach, you may or may not be behind the desk very much at all. So it does vary somewhat from campus to campus, but it certainly is a surreal and very different experience for most, if not all, students.
And Jessica, in Miami-Dade County, the lead up to this week, as they did the phased in return of students on campus, I know that the debate, sometimes very loud and in public, with the teachers union and the school district administration, was about whether or not teachers would be required to teach in person and online simultaneously. What are you hearing from your sources about the reality now that the students are back in the classroom and some, obviously lots, still remain online?
Yeah, so the LOU, which is the agreement that's in place between the teachers union and the school district, says that teachers should not be teaching online and in-person students at the same time, except in very rare circumstances, like, say, a situation where there's only one teacher in a whole school that's qualified to teach a certain course. However, the teachers union from day one said, this is happening broadly across the board. And the superintendent said, you know, pushed back and said that wasn't true. I can tell you that almost every teacher I've talked to has said that they've been asked to do this and that they didn't have a choice.
And who's making that request? Is that coming from the individual school administration,
yeah,
principal level?
Yeah, it's coming from principals. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a situation where they are still trying to figure out who's going to be online, who's going to be at home. People are shifting back and forth. And so the class rosters are changing a lot. For example, I spoke to a teacher in Miami-Dade who was teaching virtual classes up until I guess today when the high schools went back. Mm-hmm. And that teacher's, one of their virtual classes had actually ballooned to about 57 or 58 students because they were trying to, you know, get the virtual students all in one class and the in-person students into smaller classes so that they could fit, you know, a smaller number of students into a classroom with their desks spaced apart. And then they were about to switch basically because that particular teacher was going to be teaching all of their classes in person and their virtual classes were going to be going to a teacher who got an Americans with Disabilities Act accommodation and was going to be teaching from home. And so then the in-person teacher says, well, there are 18 desks that can fit into my classroom, but my classes have more than 18 students. And so the rest of the students are going to be in a separate classroom, like an overflow classroom, watching on a screen. And I've heard that from a few different teachers, that's the sort of setup that's happening when there are too many students who want to return for in-person in a specific class.
Andrew Mara, in Palm Beach County, has the county had to deal with shortage of instructors, shortage of teachers?
Yes, very much so. That has been a big struggle in these opening weeks of school. In the first week of school, about one in every 10 teachers decided to stay home and use sick leave rather than come back because they were upset about the remote work issue. There was a lot of frustration, too, with, like Jessica was saying, the request to teach virtually and in person at the same time. Pretty much all teachers here are doing both at the same time, and there's a lot of resentment about that. So there was a big crush of just classes with no teachers those first few weeks, and it was impossible in many cases to get substitutes. So the substitutes were not to be found in many cases for the same reasons that teachers didn't. We're reluctant to come on campus. So So you had a lot of classes with just no teacher, where you, so they would have to take the students from the class and split them up among other teachers in the same grade. In some cases, they would send in maybe a school counselor to oversee the class. Sometimes there were substitutes, but substitutes didn't know how to get the online students logged in. So the students who were online waiting for the class to start had no class because the substitute didn't know the password or how to open the Google Meet app.
Andrew, and then, a couple of weeks in, are those teachers still missing to that proportion, 10%?
It's not quite as bad as it was. Some have returned, but the last numbers I saw were from last week. It was about 1 in 14, roughly, remained on sick leave. Mm. So it's still, you know, a considerable number, but it's ebbed down, and it's possible that this week it's gotten a little bit better. It's not clear.
Jessica, what's the early read in Miami-Dade?
Well, I don't think we've heard the same issues happening in Miami-Dade that we've heard in Palm Beach. On the first day, on Monday, Superintendent Alberto Carvalho said he was bracing himself for staffing issues, that they had administrators and counselors and other people who were college-degreed employees at the schools standing by to take over if teachers didn't show up, but they pretty much didn't see that happen. And I've talked to a lot of teachers, and I really haven't talked to any who said, you know, I just decided not to go in. A lot of them have gone in, but they wish they didn't have to.
One other piece of education news out of Palm Beach County this week, Andrew, that we got to ask you about is the former Boca Raton High School principal who made comments about the Holocaust and got his job back. How did the school board make this decision?
Well, they felt their hands were tied. They had voted a year ago to fire him, under state law, you're allowed to appeal that termination in state administrative court. The principal did do this, and the judge sided with him and said that the grounds for firing him were basically off base. It was an overreaction, that he should have been reprimanded for what he did, but didn't merit termination. So the board felt they had to hire him back in order to not face another, you know, lawsuit and appeal. So there was a lot of reluctance, and it almost didn't pass. Even though the superintendent recommended the rehiring, saying, look, we don't have much choice. It was still only by a 4-3 vote that it did happen. But on Wednesday, the board did rehire him, and he now is back on staff.
William Latson sent a note to a parent, an email to a parent about the Holocaust. He said that he could not say the Holocaust is a factual historical event, citing that he's a school district employee. What does that mean now, given the outcome of what led to the labor dispute here, or how this labor dispute has been presumably resolved?
Well, the school board was certainly worried about the message it would send, the optics behind it. He did this thing that a lot of people found repugnant, and he was reluctant to accept responsibility for it. He tried to blame the parent instead. Didn't really. He claimed he had a right to say that. So there was a lot of ill will about it. Of course, it created a large national controversy at the time. It drew a lot of media attention. So there was a lot of concern that hiring him back would look really bad. But as a legal issue, it was difficult for them not to, because he did have a contract, and the contract could only be broken and him terminated, you know, for due cause, and this didn't meet the standard under state law. So he is back on staff. He probably will never teach in a school again. At least that's what the district says at this point. It'll be, you know, in some administrative office. But he will be still employed.
Andrew Mara sharing his reporting with us. He does that with the Palm Beach Post from Palm Beach County. Andrew, thanks so much for having you back on the South Florida Rundown. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
And Jessica Bakeman covering all things education in South Florida, really focusing in here on the K-12 return to campus. Jessica, thanks as always for sharing your time and reporting with us.
Well, and if things keep going as they're going, then maybe I'll be talking to you right back here next week.
Probably. I would guess so. Next week will be the first full week for Broward County to be back. The Broward County students began to come back on this Friday. Just take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Still to come on the Special Pledge Edition, is Miami going to be hosting a presidential debate or not? We'll talk about it here on the Special Pledge Edition of the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Thank you for your support.
My name is Arturo Valenzuela from Weston, Florida, and you're listening to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Now, here's Tom Hudson.
Arturo, you're making this an extra special South Florida Roundup on this Pledge Edition. Thanks for your help here this week on WLRN, and thanks for donating and supporting public media. The phone number and the donation on the website remain active during our program. Miami is still officially scheduled to host some kind of presidential debate. The nonpartisan commission that organizes these events announced Thursday that it would be a virtual debate. Both campaigns responded very differently, though. President Donald Trump said he'll only debate in person after recently testing positive for the coronavirus. The Biden campaign proposed delaying the next debate until October 22nd, when the third and final debate is originally scheduled to happen in Nashville. So as the future of the Miami debate remains uncertain on this Friday, both campaigns continued the work of courting key voters here in Florida. Let's talk about the week that was in presidential politics in South Florida. Glenna Milberg is back with us, co-host of This Week in South Florida on WPLG Local 10. I don't know if your neck hurts as much as mine with the whiplash that we had between these campaigns.
You know, I will say, you know, we had a whole year's worth of planning and travel and campaign trail, and that all kind of went out the window with the pandemic.
Yeah.
And now every day we just kind of wake up and say, what did we miss in the last 7 hours?
Assuming we can get 7 hours of sleep, right, Glenna?
Exactly. Yeah.
But this week particularly, I think, set a little bit, perhaps a new bar of just volatility of the back and forth with the Miami debate scheduled for the Arts Center on a Thursday. This is the original idea from the Commission on Presidential Debates. It was going to be a town hall debate, and there were some new rules that the commission wanted to put into place after the last presidential debate and how disruptive it was. And then, of course, the president comes down with the COVID-19. What do we know on this Friday about the fate of the event that's scheduled for Thursday of next week in Miami?
Well, I'll just start by saying I'll tell you what I know at this very moment at 1:40 whatever on a Friday, yeah. which may not be the case in an hour. But
right.
So what we know right now is that instead of the Miami debate at the Arts Center, which was a town hall meeting from the get-go, not like a debate like we saw descend into chaos back and forth, but a town hall with people asking questions. So first, when the president came down with COVID and then there were all these questions about doing it virtually and he said no, now instead of rescheduling it for when he might be more recovered, my understanding is that the network we're affiliated with, ABC, is hosting a town hall, but in Philadelphia that night with Joe Biden, because Donald Trump has not agreed to be part of that. So not only is it not a debate anymore, not only is it not in Miami anymore, it's just a Joe Biden town hall, apparently.
And stories of the president perhaps wanting to have a campaign rally on Thursday night someplace in Florida instead of the town hall debate that was originally scheduled, or this other event now that seems to be taking shape in Philadelphia with the former Vice President Biden.
Yeah, I think what we're doing is telegraphing all of these different things that we're hearing coming out of the campaigns. I've heard today that the president wants to be in Florida tomorrow for a rally. Mm-hmm. And that I'm understanding from one of the networks that he called into that he's having a medical checkup in real time in public tonight on the air.
Yeah, on television, I think it's supposed to be on this Friday night. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know anyone who's ever had a yearly medical checkup. To do that publicly presents some interesting challenges, but hey.
Yeah. So let's focus, I guess, on what we know or what we knew. This, as you mentioned, was not supposed to be a debate as it was titled to be when the two met in Cleveland. Instead, this was a town hall format moderated by C-SPAN. So I think a lot of folks safely assumed it was going to be a much more sober affair than what we saw in Cleveland a couple of weeks ago. What was the mission of the campaigns in terms of what they would wanted to have delivered, particularly to South Florida voters in that event?
Well, I think everyone knows by now that Florida is the it state, one of several for sure, but the number crunchers will say President Trump cannot be reelected without having Florida in his pocket. 29 electoral votes for the state is over 10% of the number needed, 270. So Florida, the importance of Florida to these candidates cannot be overstated. So because Florida is sort of almost, you know, four states in one, and big and expensive, it presents a really interesting campaign challenge. And as we talk at the moment with, you know, the razor-thin margins that Florida votes with, there are constituencies that both candidates have to appeal to, and they're all really different.
Yeah.
So, for example, when Joe Biden made his Miami appearance earlier this week, you know, his campaign literally wrote down the objective to get out a black turnout, to get the Haitian vote, to pursue the Hispanic vote, which, of course, is very diverse in itself, to get out the Jewish retirees. I mean, this is in writing from his campaign. And, you know, those constituencies in many respects have some really different issues as priorities. So you're watching two candidates try to be all things to all people.
And trying to appeal to those specifics of voters that can add up to enough votes to sway an election and, of course, carry those electoral votes here in Florida. Glenna Milberg is with us from WPLG Local 10, talking about the 2020 election here in South Florida. You mentioned the vice president in town earlier this week. Little Haiti, Little Havana were a couple of his stops before his own town hall at the Perez Art Museum. What were the messages that he was delivering to voters?
I think it was really important for Vice President Biden to come to South Florida, where the word socialist has been front and center as a headline against him and others. And I think one of the things his campaign and he really wanted to do was to take on full frontal, take on that word, welcome the chance to say, look, I think he said verbatim, do I look like a socialist to you? Because he and the campaign understand that, you know, some people will hear that and say, oh, come on, that's ridiculous. But there are so many people in South Florida who are so triggered, and rightfully so, by the word socialist, because they have firsthand experience of exactly what it's like to live in a socialist and dictatorship. And so that is a word that really resonates. And Joe Biden wanted to come and say, here's why I am not a socialist. I'm taking this very seriously, this word, and here is why I am not a socialist. And I think you heard him say that Tuesday in various ways over and over again. And, you know, that as diverse as the Hispanic vote is in Florida and everywhere else in the nation, yeah. I mean, there is a diverse collection of countries that are run or have been or are now run by socialist dictatorships. And so that I think that was one of his priorities on Tuesday.
Vote by mail ballots are out. Tens of thousands have already been turned in. Early voting just 10 days away. Glenna, what are you watching in the week that will be for politics here in South Florida?
So many people voting.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable how many people are voting now. Vote by mail. I want to take this opportunity to say I and my station have done a lot of work really looking into the voting process in South Florida, Miami-Dade, Broward, and Monroe counties. And I just will flat out put out there, and I'm sure Tom, you and LRN have done the same thing. We have found nothing to suggest that any voting method, be it early or vote by mail or in person on precinct days or turning in your ballot, all of those things are perfectly safe. There is nothing to suggest fraud. There is nothing to suggest unintentional screw-ups, nothing at all. So I think people are really vigilant and really in tune with what that news is, and they're voting. And it's really, the numbers coming in from vote by mail so early are amazing.
Yeah, they are extraordinary. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people voting in South Florida already. And early voting is still 10 days away. And it's not election day, as I've said a few times here already. It's the last day to vote, which is November 3rd. Glenna, thanks so much for spending a little bit of time with us and sharing your reporting with us here on WLRN.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Glenna Milberg with WPLG Local 10 with us via FaceTime audio. Finally, on the roundup this week, 2020 has been a heck of a year, certainly. And that includes professional sports. Some Miami teams are actually doing well. WLRN's digital editor, Lance Dixon, tells us why it's worth celebrating.
It seems pretty fair to say that 2020 has been a year filled with a lot of hopelessness and sadness due to the impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. But the past few months have offered a glimmer of hope in the form of sports.
It's this group right here. Obviously, this group, more than anything, they just love to compete. We're so grateful for this opportunity in this bubble. This group would have done it in an empty gym with nobody watching.
That's Miami Heat head coach Eric Spoelstra talking to ESPN after the Miami Heat beat the Boston Celtics to win the Eastern Conference Finals. And while the Miami Heat certainly had a competitive team throughout the entire regular season, there were so many question marks about how they'd perform once the plans for the bubble were solidified in Orlando. Turns out, they were perfectly ready for the moment. The team, led by all-star Jimmy Butler and a great supporting cast, eased its way through the playoffs, and that journey has been capped by an NBA Finals appearance against the Los Angeles Lakers, led by former Heat All-Star LeBron James.
This is, of course, the organization's first trip back to the finals since 2014. You had a player then by the name of LeBron James. You will now be facing him in the NBA Finals. What is that going to be like?
I mean, that's a great storyline, right? Can you let us enjoy this for a little bit right now? This is hard to do. It's hard to get to this.
Me and so many of my friends constantly talked about the joy we felt in rooting on the scrappy players of the Heat. WPLG Local 10 captured the euphoria of it all in West Miami-Dade on the night the Heat advanced to the NBA Finals.
Heat fans are going to do what Heat fans are going to do. This is a woman and her, you know, she's expecting over here. We got a man hanging out of the window. People are excited.
As days and months have blended together, as we all mostly remain in our homes, watching the Heat compete a few nights a week has been a welcome break in an often monotonous year. And the Heat isn't alone. The Miami Marlins had a surprisingly good season as Major League Baseball resumed play and made the playoffs for the first time in 17 years. And the University of Miami's football team is undefeated as it heads into a huge matchup against the Clemson Tigers this weekend. Has the return of sports been perfect from a public health standpoint? Not exactly. The numerous positive COVID-19 tests for Marlins players earlier in the season are a strong indicator that things didn't go perfectly across the pro leagues, but the return of sports was perfect in that it offered a brief escape that could still be enjoyed from a safe social distance.
WLRN's digital editor Lance Dixon talking about some good moments these days in Miami sports. The Miami Heat play the Los Angeles Lakers Game 5 of the NBA Finals Friday night. Game 6, if it's necessary, is Sunday. How will you be rooting for the Heat or the Hurricanes this weekend? Let us know on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at WLRN. That is our program this week. It is produced by Alexander Gonzalez. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Natalia Clement helped out on social media. Lance Dixon is our digital editor. News director Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman, editorial director. The director of radio programming is Jason Sabka. The director of radio operations and our program's technical supervisor is Peter J. Mertz. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and supporting WLRN. This program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist.